Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:48 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is March 28th, and I thought I'd kick off with JGBs. They got up to 25 basis points today, and that's pretty much a red line for the Bank of Japan, and they did intervene, and that drove the yen down to test the lows of 2015. But the yield didn't move. It's still at 25 basis points. So that suggests that the Bank of Japan are going to have to do more than intervene on a single day. They're going to have to come in with a really significant bid to support prices at these levels. And when we look at the yen, it's oversold in the short term. We've had a very meaningful move over the course of the last 4 weeks. We're right in the region of the lows from back in 2015. And this is shown inversely here. And there's a clear short-term oversold condition. So I think it's reasonable to anticipate that there should at least be a pause in consolidation around these levels. What I thought was interesting is if we look at the yield curve spread. Oh, sorry, that's the forward curve for the yen. If we look at the yield curve spread for Japan, it's got a very classic shape. So everything is negative all the way out to about 3 years, and then we have an upward slope from left to right. But if they try to depress yields at the 10-year, it suggests then that we're going to have a belly in the curve. So everything earlier in terms of maturity than the 10-year should rise, and then everything beyond it should also rise. And that would create a very significant belly in the curve. It's the kind of thing that barbell strategies were designed to take advantage of. But it's very questionable whether the Bank of Japan is going to be successful. How much money are they going to have to throw at this problem in order to try and contain the upward pressure on yields? Because yields are rising everywhere. And when we think about Australia, for example, the 10-year yield there is up to 2.9% and accelerating, and back in the region of the peaks from back in 2017 and 18. So very oversold in the short term, and I think it's quite likely we're going to see at least a pause at some stage. Oil prices today were in negative territory and in a reasonably dynamic manner. And a good part of the reason for that was because of China. So let's take a look at China's government bond yield as well, because it was trading at a premium to US treasuries, and now it isn't, or at least it's not trading at nearly as much of a premium. So the 10-year yield was actually in negative territory. It has not been rising in line with government bonds everywhere else. So there's still some support here for Chinese assets, and not least because the renminbi has been really quite steady. But it is weakening. And one of the arguments, I think it was initially proposed by Albert Edwards, is that if the yen continues to depreciate, it's going to drag the renminbi with it, because of the competitive advantage it would lend to Japanese exporters over their Chinese counterparts, and China would then be forced to devalue their currency to remain competitive. Well, the yen is in the region of its 2015 lows, and interestingly, the renminbi is still stronger than when it was in 2015, but substantially weaker than it was in 2015, but substantially stronger than it was back in 2019 and 20. But there's certainly a loss of momentum on the downside over the course of the last year, and it has the dollar here has rallied to break the sequence of lower rally highs. So I think we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the potential that China's currency is going to depreciate, and not least because eventually they will follow through on some of the promises that they've made. So we're definitely seeing that some support is coming through for the property sector, and The Hang Seng Properties Index rebounded emphatically from the lows put in the middle of March, and it was well off the lows in here today and consolidating in the region of the 30,000 level, and it does look like it can go higher from here. The Shanghai Property Index is also quite steady and pushing back up towards the upper side of this range. So I think it's important to highlight the fact that the vast majority of stocks that are in the Chinese real estate sector, the listed sector at least, are state-owned or have got overt as well as covert government support. So we're not getting an accurate depiction of what's going on in the market simply by looking at the shares. And then we can think about the banking sector, because China's banks generally tend to extend most of their credit in the first quarter of the year. And we have seen that credit availability has improved, and the banking sector is beginning to steady. So there is the potential that as we think about where will the new sources of liquidity come from, well, Japan is a potential if they do continue to follow through, but if on their promise to continue to support asset prices and to foment inflationary pressures. But if that's to be the case, then they're going to have to significantly bring down yields and definitely defend the 25 basis point level on the JGB. And then China is being rather reticent about how much liquidity they're willing to pump into the market. But they're having the same issue with containing the Omicron variant as everyone else. It's extraordinarily transmissible, so it's extremely difficult to contain, and they're locking down various parts of the country. So then we had Tesla announcing over the weekend that they've had to shut down their Shanghai plant, and that certainly didn't impact the share in here today, because we've seen a significant number of these mega cap companies engaging in financial engineering. Tesla announced today that they're going to go through another stock split and bring down the share price so that it's more accessible for retail investors. And of course, retail investors have been instrumental in helping to support the stock over the course of the last couple of years. So there's obviously still interest in Tesla, and of course, it is a major component of the options market as well. And Tesla's rebound in here today certainly helped the Nasdaq, so it was able to push on to another new high and back testing the 15,000 level. We also saw that Bitcoin broke out over the weekend, follow through on the upside in here today. So now coming back up to test the 50,000 level, but clearly breaking out of this range. Like I was saying in the audio on Friday, there was a wedging characteristic. When you see breakouts from these kinds of characteristics, they do tend to be rather explosive. And at $1,800 on Bitcoin is a pretty good dynamic move. We also saw we haven't at least the potential for a similar type of move to unwind the oversold condition in Delivery Hero. It's got this falling wedge characteristic as well. And we have a sequence of breakdowns that haven't been sustained, and yet the sequence of lower rally highs remains intact. And we have seen that there's been a significant downtrend available or evident in companies like Uber, and it has steadied over the last couple of days, but there's still a clear downtrend overall. And DoorDash has also been trending downwards, but it did rally enough to break that downtrend and was in positive territory in here today. So we're definitely getting at least some willingness to support speculative assets coming through on Wall Street in here today. And That's rather interesting because the dollar continues to strengthen, and the 10-year yield was in negative territory in here today. So we're getting at least some buying the dip coming through. It's inevitable that somebody is going to want to pay or willing to buy 10-year yields at a 2.5% yield if they are of the view that inflationary pressures will be mitigated by the end of this year. So one thing that I think is relevant, and I think we're getting a lot of obfuscation right now. The 10-year minus the 2-year yield curve is down to 12 basis points. Now, in classic terms, it's reasonable to anticipate that the stock market would continue to rally after the inversion, and usually we tend to see the acceleration phase in a bull market occur in proximity to the inversion, and then subsequently, when the yield curve inversion starts to become problematic, is when it starts to ramp higher after the inversion. So what that suggests is that there's the potential that stocks can continue to extend these rebounds. But if we start to see the Federal Reserve really ramping higher in terms of interest rates and taking 50 basis point jumps, then, and in fact, the futures market has already priced in 4 50 basis point hikes this year. So an additional 8 25 basis point rate hikes by the end of the year. So that's also emblematic of this acceleration that we're seeing in bond yields. And the Federal Reserve is saying, well, we don't necessarily have to have a recession, but perhaps inflation is in fact going to be transitory, or we're going to see growth metrics really start to get pegged back. Well, I think it's the growth metrics getting pegged back could be very much in line with what we can anticipate from markets, because the stock market is beginning to price that in, and they're beginning to price in the potential that, yeah, everyone's talking about interest rate hikes, but they may not in fact occur. And if that's the case, well, then bonds, they should rally, but they're not rallying yet. And in the meantime, stocks should do well as a hedge against the bond market, and then also would benefit if we do get additional liquidity or money supply growth remains at an historically quick clip. So this is, I think, a rather tense environment because the economy is susceptible to slowing growth. It means that people will start to encounter difficulties affording mortgages. So even though the inventory of homes is quite low, the ability to afford them is becoming progressively more difficult. So that could help to balance out the market. We could certainly start to see that people are seeing their purchasing power limited by inflationary pressures, so demand starts to ebb, and that's also potentially problematic. The things that are definitely starting to see additional money coming in are in the resources sector, because infrastructure growth is going to be front and center. So if oil prices start to pull back, then that is going to be beneficial overall for the wider market, and certainly beneficial for miners in terms of their production costs. Gold prices were down $38 in here today, so still pausing here between $1,900 and $1,950. This is a rather dynamic move, though, so the $1,900 area would really need to continue to hold if the breakout is to be sustained. When we think about what exactly is the most likely scenario, if we're going to see growth ebbing, then and the threat followed through on of interest rate hikes, well, that's going to contribute to a choppy market environment. Now, we've seen the VIX index pulling back really aggressively over the last while, and then it was in additional negative territory in here today. So that's also helping to support speculative activity in the stock market. And it's coming back into the region of the lows put in. And we're rapidly seeing a short-term overbought condition replacing the short-term oversold condition. So I do anticipate we're going to get some consolidation in the not so distant future. When we think about the dollar, well, the dollar was strong because there's the potential that there's going to be fewer produced because of less fiscal stimulus and then quantitative tightening. If we have a strong dollar, that is positive for US denominated assets. Ultimately, it should be beneficial for yields. And if yields do start to come back down, well, then that is going to be beneficial for the wider economy. And the stock market is beginning to price that in. Now, the dollar is coming back up towards the 100 level. And of course, a strong dollar, and when commodities are denominated in dollars, it's a neutral for the US because they don't have the currency risk. But it's not great news for everywhere else. So we could see that inflationary pressures begin to ebb first in the USA. Now, we don't have a lot of evidence that it's happening just yet, but certainly leading indicators for where growth is going to go are starting to point negative. And it suggests that the go-go time for innovative se or the innovation sector has probably passed us. Now, we've had a really significant pullback. And generally, after the crash from the bubble, then you get the first short covering rally, and that's what we're getting right now. And that short covering rally will be enough to chasten the shorts. So we could easily see some of these innovation sectors pushing back up into the region of the 1,000-day or the 200-day moving averages. They might even go back up and test the lower side of the overhead trading ranges, which in this case would be about 100, and then subsequently move into a lengthy period of ranging, because the valuations are exceptionally difficult to justify when you have higher yields. And I don't think anyone's really expecting yields to go all the way back down to towards zero. But we're really oversold on the bond market right now. So any kind of downward pressure that we see from oil, for example, would help to mitigate some of those inflationary pressures. And we could start to see yields starting to come back down. And they're really oversold, so we could get a good sized rally. And of course, that would be beneficial for the technology sector and the growth sector. So it might be because that might be one of the primary reasons why the Nasdaq is rebounding, and we're starting to see some strength coming through in the most levered portion of that market. But I do think that it's the innovation sector is most likely to put in a lengthy period of ranging, whereas we're starting to see the steel producers and steel prices breaking out. Copper remains really very firm, and the mining sector overall remains on a recovery trajectory. There's still a lot of geopolitical tension. The Russian market opened up again in here today. Obviously it's still sanctioned. It's difficult for foreign investors to buy, but it's at least steady, and the Russian Sovereign Wealth Fund is supporting prices. So it's likely that we've probably seen an important low, and considering that we are in the region of the lows from back in 2014 and 15, and then also that this is a market which is susceptible to volatility and is best bought following these periodic pullbacks. Then the valuations are attractive. There will be investors starting to look favorably on the valuation and hoping that the geopolitical situation will get better. There have been plenty of instances in the past where we've had rising geopolitical tensions, and it's certainly tempting to think that this time is different, and there's a lot of people worried about a third world war. Some people even saying that we're already in a third world war, but there's not really a great deal of evidence to support that, and there's a lot of escalation that could go under or that would have to take place in order to get there. Now, it doesn't mean that we won't get there, but when valuations have already priced it in as a fact, well, in the event that the worst doesn't happen, well, then there's the potential that things could get better. So certainly there are going to be bargain hunters starting to look at the most oversold portions of the market. If Japan and China do in fact continue to support liquidity measures, well, then capital is global and mobile, and it will help to support asset prices. And the strength of the dollar is likely to mean it will be an attractive destination for flows. The relative valuation that Japan and Europe have is also likely to be attractive if inflation isn't going to just die, but rather that it's going to ebb and flow. And I suspect that that is what we're going to have, that we've had a big spike in inflationary pressures, and that will moderate as growth starts to moderate. But we're still in an environment where people want higher wages. We're in an environment where central banks definitely need to continue to try and foment inflation. And it's certainly an environment where we have financial repression. So we're seeing some unwinding of short-term oversold conditions. We're starting to see the short-term inflationary pressures beginning to peak, but ultimately it's likely that inflationary pressures will rebuild later. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.